Matty Ellett. Welcome to My Worst Leadership Moment podcast.
Well, I can't say I'm really pumped about being here today, Brendan, and sharing sad stories, but no, I'm obviously can't wait to have the conversation.
Well, mate, it's funny you mention this because the premise of this show, sort of as a smart man and leader like you would know, that vulnerability is so important in leadership. So those that come on, to me, have showed the first stage of vulnerability. And I know you share some good stories, mate, from experiences. So looking forward to hearing from what you share. Mate, if just before we get into the crux of that sharing, how about you give our audience just a little bit of background on Matty Ellett and sort of what's brought you to where you are today, buddy?
I guess in the leadership context, Brendan, I started as a director of community service and local government in the early 90s and then moved into rugby league coaching after retiring, and then somehow stumbled into a head coach's role in England, and then coached in the NRL as a head coach for 13 seasons and did a little bit of assistant coaching around that as well. Now I own a business and obviously a director and creator of that business as well.
Yeah, fantastic. Just plug, what's the business again?
The business is called The Change Room, and we do well-being and leadership content, you know, for government organisations and corporates.
Excellent, mate. And I can speak firsthand to some of the content you share. It's fantastic, the work you're doing, and also the book that you wrote. Very, very simple, practical stuff that people can apply straight away, mate. So thanks for the work that you do.
Yeah, I think that's our gift. It's not necessarily coming up with the information, Brendan, but giving people access to high-performance approach, giving people access to cutting-edge science, because people that do that and come up with that knowledge tend to make it very complex. So that's probably the premise behind the programs we run. Also, we do it, you know, in very high-performance facilities and stadiums, and use people like Anthony Minicello and Mark Hughes and other high-profile doctors. Yeah.
And, you know, mate, just to sort of blow some steam up you a little bit, but from our episode that we did with you on cultural leadership, slowly but surely, I'm nowhere near completely there taking sugar out of my diet, but slowly but surely I've reduced sugar. And one of the things, I'm fasting more regularly, but also I make my own chocolate, sugar-free chocolate now, have done for quite some time. And the other thing I tried, which I loved, was the frozen fruit with the coconut cream blended, mate. So you've had an impact on me, buddy. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a really good way of making ice cream, that's for sure. I've got some bad news that goes with that, though, that I've just learned.
Oh, no. What are you going to tell me? What do I need to change?
Oh, mate, don't worry. I put my head in my hands when I heard it as well. You can use berries, but you can't use bananas or mangoes, because when you blend bananas or mangoes, you might as well just have straight sugar.
So we must have seen the same thing, because that's, I separate my berries and banana now at least an hour or two between having the two.
Yeah.
I've seen the same thing.
Well, when you eat bananas as a whole thing, it's got the fiber in it. So it contains the glycogen in there, or glucose, sorry, in there. So you don't get it as, but when you blend it, it's just sugar.
So you're telling me your worst leadership moment is giving out this health advice that's not right?
Well, as I said, is that our strength is giving access to cutting-edge science, and that is certainly not a static thing these days.
Oh, mate, it all moves pretty quickly. What we did with our kids sort of 20 years ago is very different to apparently what you do with kids now, and the cycle's been through about three times.
That's the interesting thing, Brendan. A lot of the new age, let's use nutrition, for example, is basically what your great-grandparents were doing. You know, particularly in the food that they eat, the food that we get now is, if someone asks me what's your best tip on diet and nutrition now, I just don't eat anything out of the pack.
In the hybrid working world, I've seen too many business owners and their businesses suffer because of poor performing employees, leading to below average results. If you want to improve your employees' performance to deliver consistent results for your business, you have to master one-on-one meetings.
The doors to our Master One-on-One Meetings training program are opening soon. I'll teach you how to improve employee performance and deliver consistent results using one-on-one meetings. To be one of the first people notified when the doors open, go to leaderbydesign.au/waitlist. Don't wait, sign up now.
Good advice, I think.
Yeah.
Good advice. Yeah. Mate, let's dive into Matty Elliott's worst leadership moment. So how about you tell us, to set the scene, give a bit of a story about this, around this worst leadership moment.
I think the word story is really important here, Brendan, because the truth is your worst leadership moment of someone who's been in leadership for a long time is your last mistake. That's the truth. Because the rest of them, what you do get to do is contextualize it as a lesson. And if, you know, I love the quote, if you make the same mistake twice, it's a decision. And I got told that a long time ago, and I've really taken that on board. So my last real leadership moment, that, well, worst one, was my last one, the last, you know, mistake I made. But just for the sake of storytelling, was, I'll use my New Zealand Warriors story, where I got appointed as head coach after having a year off or being an assistant at the Roosters after being head coach at Penrith for 5 years. And I went there with the intention of not only making the team better, but making the whole organisation better. And what happened there was I moved my attention away from my key strength and my key priority, their players. The people that you're head coaching are the players. You know, you can have impact and influence in other part of the organisation, but you're not there as a CEO. I was appointed as head coach. I wasn't appointed as a head of recruitment or general manager or in any other role. But for all the right intentions, what I wanted to do was create an organisation that basically made the NRL say we need to put another team in New Zealand because they just win everything. Now, lovely concept, great concept, great intention. But the learning there is that if you put your attention on things that you can't control, your influence goes down. Even if it's the right idea. I'm not saying they were. But equally, if I put my attention on the things I could control, the training environment, the impact that I have on players, recognizing their unique abilities and skills and finding what our strengths were and developing that, my influence would have gone up in the organization, and all those other things that I was recognizing that weren't quite right, or I believe weren't quite right, you have impact on them. I just did it around the wrong way. And I think that's what happens with a lot of leaders, is that because they've been around a while, most of the time you have experience that gives you a leadership opportunity, and you're able to identify things outside your portfolio in the environment or in the organization that you're working that you could be better. But as soon as you put your attention in those areas that you can't control, your impact gets diluted. And the people that are most important to you, they don't have your full attention. You're a dad, so you understand that if you don't give your kids attention, eventually your impact and control over them diminishes. That's really the story. So it was really, not putting my attention into my playing group and my staff that were in the football staff and empowering them to be as good as they could be, rather focusing on creating an organisation. It was back to front.
And what were some of the key impacts that you saw as a result of, I guess, in want of a better word, spreading yourself thin, focusing on too much, losing your core focus, trying to do too much.
I believe the biggest and most important impact that leaders have is human connection. The best leaders, you know, they know your middle name. They know when your kids' birthdays are. Yeah, you know they care about you. Now, this wasn't mean I didn't care about everyone in my organization. I really did. But I didn't show that care because my attention was elsewhere. And while young kids are a really good example of it, they're just young humans, all humans. We don't understand it as leaders. We think going in and saying good morning to people and asking them how they're going is just trivial. But that's not true. I work with a lot of leaders individually, and that's one of the first things I work about, creating connection with key people in your organization. And so many of them, I don't really see the importance of that. But yeah, until you do that, you don't get the best out of the people that are under your charge.
Yeah, hear, hear. Was there any touch of even ego wrapped up in, you know, you're coming in and maybe the Warriors were expecting big things and you just, you know, you wanted to deliver like any person coming into a new role wants to deliver?
I'm reflecting on that. I hadn't really thought about that, Brendan, but my intuitive response to that is yes, it's definitely some ego attached to it. But more care, more belief in what could have been created. But it's like every creation, you don't start with the outside first, you start with the foundation first. And you build your influence around, as I said before, focusing on the things you can control. And what I've found when I do that, and I really focus on the things I can control and I do them at a high level, and people start coming to you rather than you going to them with ideas, because they see that you have real influence. Now, I could give you 1,000 examples of footy coaches, but you know, the best coach in rugby league is a guy called Wayne Bennett. And he doesn't focus on anything outside his control, and his influence is huge. So you can see why the marketing department go to him. He doesn't go to them, you know, as to extract ideas or maybe even utilize him in some of their approach. That's one real simple example.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a great example that a lot of people, certainly around the rugby league circles, can resonate with in understanding that. I guess that's driven his huge success over a long, long period of time. One of the other things that comes to mind, I think what you're sort of saying without saying, is that in the role you came into at the Warriors, it's almost like you cared too much. And because you were caring too much, you were trying to impact too many areas and took away from your main focus.
Yeah, but let's go back to that ego thing. This is that if I remove ego from that thought process, that I did care, I genuinely cared, and I wanted to be part of an extraordinary organization. But if I just went, look, I'm not appointed as CEO or anything else. I'm appointed to take charge of this organization. And if I used the wisdom that I had, and I'm doing it retrospectively now, just fully focused on the people that were in my charge, build relationships, that influence would have gone out from there rather than trying to build it from outside in. That doesn't mean that as a leader, you remove yourself from anything else. That doesn't work that way. But your primary focus, your priority is, you know, the people that are in your charge, your strength, and the things that are going to make the biggest difference to the part of the organization you're leading. Then it builds out from there.
Yeah, absolutely. On reflection as well, how much of that scenario could you say, well, as head coach, I imagine, where did you report into? Was it the CEO of the organization?
Yeah, and they weren't doing anything wrong, by the way. I just felt there was a lot of things that could have been done better. And there was also, you know, part of developing a pathways into the NRL team, that we had people employed to do that. And it wasn't up to me to initially put all my time and invest energy into all those other areas. My biggest job was the players that were in the NRL team, and then the next level down, the next level down.
What brought you back on track?
Getting fired. Yeah, well, it was an inevitable consequence. I can sit here and make excuses and say that I didn't really get the opportunity and our performances weren't that bad. But my responsibility was me that was putting the attention in the wrong areas. I can dispute, what the board's decision was, but if I was sitting on the board, I'd probably be considering the same thing. I probably would have given it more time, but I'd also lost my close relationship with the playing group. That wasn't their fault. That was my responsibility. So again, it was inevitable that if I was going to stay down that same pathway, and I was definitely working really hard in that area. And when I was with the players, of course, my energy levels weren't the same. Can you see that even? Now, I'm not going to say I was tired, but I've been distracted in other areas. I can't dispute the decision that the club made. Did at the time, in my mind, not publicly. I look back on it retrospectively now and go, you were doing the wrong thing.
Yeah, I understand, mate. So there's a couple of key things from this that you mentioned a number of times. So that sort of focusing on what you can control, not what you can't control, and keeping a focus, but also that importance of human connection. So if you use that as a base for how has that situation and what you learned, particularly those key learnings, shaped your leadership journey today and moving forward?
I think the thing that I've learned most is obviously, again, is developing high-level relationships. And being aware of what people's unique skill sets are. What are the things that they can bring to the organization? So we all have job descriptions, right? And as a leader, you have expectations of these people. But you've also got to know what else they can bring to the organization. And you're not going to know that by reading a CV. You're going to know that by developing high-level relationships with them, talking, letting them know what your interests are. You talked about vulnerability. Going to them and going, look, I need a hand in this area, and I think there's some real capacity to help there. So it's not about their job description, about what you see in them, what they have that they can bring to the organisation, and having a relationship where they feel enough trust to share that.
So, Matty, in all of this learning and this experience you've had, which has shaped you today, it sounds like, if I could sort of sum it up a bit, in that you're suggesting as a key bit of advice for leaders in order to develop relationships so that human connection, because it's so important, is to do that very technical thing called talking, getting to know people. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think. I'm going to give you a quote. I can't remember who I stole it off, but I stole it off someone, not mine. Be the leader you wish you had. So when you think about that, think about the leaders that you see that have had a real impact on organization. Tell me the one that hasn't had high-level relationship, with the people that they were, leading or in their charge. And I don't have an answer to that. I've never seen someone, I've seen people, because I come from a different area, that can do the do-tell stuff, but they still had a relationship with all their staff. So I think that for me is a fundamental. And regardless of AI, regardless of new approach, the thing that is a prime human is human connection and relationships. We can't get away from that. That's what made us the best hunter-gatherer on the planet, is human connection. So when we're on our own, which is now the biggest cause of mental health on the planet, apparently loneliness. We don't function well. So as a leader, you want to actually come from the other side. Is that you don't want people to be not lonely. You want to make people feel like they belong to an organization and they're valued. And we know you've got more value to come. We've got to find out where that's coming from.
Absolutely, mate. And Matty, this is exactly why I needed to have you on series one of My Worst Leadership Moment, to reinforce that message. You know, you've experienced great things in your personal life, your professional life. There's some downs in all that sort of stuff. That's the nature of sport and high-level performance and stuff like that. But just to bring it back to that thing about investing time in relationships, building human connection, is absolutely paramount. So, mate, I want to thank you for your vulnerability today on our show, being part of series one of My Worst Leadership Moment. Thanks for being a fantastic guest and sharing your story.
I can't wait to get back onto your best leadership moment.
It's coming. It's coming. Don't you worry. We do want to flip it. Thank you, mate.
Thanks, Wade.